On Monday, August 8th, Tall Can Audio hits 1,000 episodes.
Wait, that's still on? Who could possibly still care?
And the gang is all here to celebrate.
It's euphoric. It's got to be close to nirvana. It's outstanding.
For the first time ever, Maddie, Michaela, Rob, and Matt are all live in studio together.
It's happening, you guys! It's happening! Oh, my God, guys! Oh, my God! I wish you all were here!
Is this likely to go well?
Just check my notes here. No!
At least it will make a lot of noise.
Boom. Here comes the boom.
1,000 pods and 1,000 pints.
I don't think I've ever been as proud in my entire life.
TCA 1000 drops Monday, August 8th, wherever you find low-quality podcasts.
Fuck, it's out of control. Shit.
How's it going, everybody? Welcome back to an all-new episode of Tall Can Sports, only on the Tall Can Audio Podcast Network. You can give us a follow on Twitter and Instagram, at Tall Can Audio. Joining me on the line tonight, we're talking Raptors, so you know it's our boy, Matty Lang. It has to have been quite a weekend for you, man. How are you holding up?
I'm in definite recovery mode at the moment, my good man.
That's fair. It's been a long week.
That is an understatement of the century, I'm sure, but...
It's been a long wait for you, man. That's fair. You know what? We talked a few times about how many games during this playoff run that you've been able to get down to. I know you weren't at game six. Did you look into it? Were you almost there? Are you kicking yourself? Was it going to cost you an arm and a leg? Did you know?
And no, and you know what? I am kicking myself a little bit. I actually had casual friends actually message me. I want to say on the Thursday night and say, hey, we've got an extra ticket. So it was going to be face value, up in the 300s. And I, for whatever reason, I just thought to myself, you know what? It'd be nice to be there, but I'd rather actually be with closer friends.
Yeah, I get that.
Ended up, I was telling you, you know, offline, I got together with, it ended up being like 20 fairly good friends for this game and got to enjoy it with them. And as much as I was kicking myself for not being there, I think just the emotion of being there with people who you know have had that shared experience with you for 24 long years.
Yeah.
You know, guys who, you know, at least went to one game at the Sky Dome. you know, lived through the Damon Stoudemire and the
TJ Ford years.
The TJ Ford years and Jorge Garbajosa. And,
yeah.
You know, all of that and, you know, getting completely dominated for years by LeBron James at his prime. It was a very – it was almost a religious experience.
Nice.
you know, there was a lot of hugging. There was a lot of tears.
Right.
There was just a couple – you know, everybody had their cameras out and everybody started showing each other the videos we all have of each other. And there's so much – just smiling and emotion and disbelief.
Right.
That was just, I'm sure it would have been that way at the game as well with absolute strangers.
Yeah.
But able to watch that at home, and especially the way those last 10 seconds went.
You mean those last nine minutes? Jeez.
Yeah. it just forever. Dragged on.
And that's at it. Like, this was, for me, right, as a much more casual Raptors guy who's jumped on the bandwagon here in this playoff run, but you're watching it and that last minute, 2 minutes, whatever it was, you mentioned last 10 seconds, how long it was taking with the replays and all the timeouts and the fouls and everything that goes into that, right, was always the thing I hated the most about basketball, right? It was so hard to keep me engaged at that point. But once you're now invested in it, it's like this whole extra level of suspense, this shoot you in the face kind of, oh my God, what is this call going to be? There was one that late where they're looking at, like, who did it go off? And they're like, I think it touched his shorts. And you're like, just give us the ball.
But at some point, you're like, just give somebody the goddamn ball.
No, it's true. It's true. So that was awesome.
I'll live with it off their shorts. Just give somebody the ball and get on with the game, right?
Yeah.
So, and truthfully, I mean, I think a lot of people hate – I mean, it's the same thing in the NFL, right?
Of course.
The complaint's always, you know, the fourth quarter at the end, this is going to take 20 minutes.
Yep.
I will say, I feel like this was the first time the Raptors were in a playoff game like this. This, at least this go-around, right? I can't remember another game this entire run with that last, you know, minute to 30 seconds where there was a lot of posturing and a lot of timeouts. And part of it, you know, a couple years ago they did remove some – timeout, so there's not as many to use nowadays.
Yeah,
and I do think the coaches are getting better about using them properly,
right?
Throughout the actual game, as opposed to, you know, just those quick set plays at the end, right? So, I do also agree when it's your team and it's your team, you know, with the playoffs on the line.
Yeah,
you're almost suspended in time.
I agree with that. Yeah,
you know it's taking forever, and you want it to get going. There is the only time that I was ready to throw something at the wall was we had an inbound play and there was just nothing there, and you know, Marc Gasol calls a timeout.
Yeah.
And then we run another play and it goes, you know, same play again. Like, okay, this is the third inbound play in literally 0.9 seconds of game time, and you're like, okay, can we just fucking play this out? Can we just get the ball in?
For sure. So I got a few things I want to ask you about the game. I got, you know, the aftermath and certainly teeing up the next round, but, it'd be remiss if we didn't talk a little bit about what's happening right now. And that is for me, cracking open an Old Flame brunette. I've talked about Old Flame on here before. They're out of Port Perry, not too far from where I grew up. I mentioned a week or so ago, I was away with my old man and we were doing some camping and some craft beering. And this was one of the leftovers we were able to bring back for me. So it's kind of cool because it's hard to find these guys up in Ottawa. So, that's what I got going on. What's happening over on your end?
There is not a drop of beer left in my house.
Okay, that's fair.
As one might imagine, the party went on fairly late at Old Casalang.
Yeah.
So there wasn't much left. So... I am. I poured myself a little Dramamine tonight.
Okay.
To get myself through the old podcast.
That a boy.
I feel like I'd be doing everybody a disservice by not having at least a little something on an episode of Tall Can Audio.
That's
but
fair.
But it is a Jameson tonight, as the beer store that's normally in my fridge has been sufficiently drained of all its supply at the moment. I did want to ask you before we move on to the sports stuff.
Yep.
I did hear you and Rob talking about one of the beers from Nova Scotia.
Yeah.
It was the one from Amherst.
Yeah, the Mean Joe Bean.
That's the one. How was that?
Pretty good. It was a coffee blonde, which I had never had before. I've had a number of coffee stouts, and you know, I'm not a coffee drinker, so it's strange that I don't mind the flavor in my beer, but I always enjoy the stouts. This was my first coffee blonde, and because it's a blonde, right, the beer style is a little lighter, so you taste the coffee through it a lot more, and I wasn't sure if I was going to like that, but it was pretty tasty. I did. I enjoyed it and came in a nice glass stubby. You don't see those too often anymore, so that was pretty cool too, but good one. I'd have again, I think.
Right on. I got a friend who lives in Amherst, so I was taking notes and wondering what I was going to ask for when they do their summer trip back home.
Yeah, that's not a bad choice, man. I wouldn't hesitate to go with that at all. So, look, I want to start here. The ratings for Game 6, it's a Saturday night. The usual Hockey Night in Canada slot, but there's, you know, there's no hockey happening at the time. The country is energized. Certainly the city of Toronto is energized, and more have been getting on the bandwagon as the Raptors have rolled along. You got a chance to close it out. A lot of unique circumstances, and it ends up becoming, for not the first time in this playoff run, the most viewed Raptors game in history, and the most viewed basketball in Canadian history. It reached 6.8 million Canadians at its peak towards the end, But throughout the game, it had an average rating of, I believe it was 3.31. That's over 3.3 million Canadians. For our American friends listening, it's basically a 1 to 10 ratio here in terms of our population versus yours. You'd be looking at 30 million Americans, you know, if we're trying to put it in context, and that would have crushed the Game of Thrones finale. So this was a huge number for Canadian television in general, let alone the basketball game. We've talked before about how many people have jumped on the bandwagon versus you and your buddies who've been there since the Dome, who've been there since Garbajosa, who've been there 24 years waiting for this. Is there any sort of, you know, what does that rating mean to you? What does that number mean to you, if anything at all? And is there any sort of resentment is way too strong of a word, but kind of, oh, look at all these Johnny-come-latelys sort of thing, feeling to it? Like, what does that number say to you as one of the long-suffering guys?
It tells you what a cultural moment this game was. And I mentioned to my friends, you know, during the game that this was the biggest game since a Canadian invented the goddamn game.
True, man.
Right? This is a put it on a postage stamp moment type of thing.
Oh, I think Kawhi did that.
A couple times.
Yeah.
he completely embarrassed Giannis a few times during that game.
For sure.
And there was one particularly from a pass from Kyle that just
felt like it
sealed the deal a little bit.
Yeah, right over Giannis.
You kind of just felt like that was it, you know,
they were done. I saw a great tweet as they showed Giannis returning to Milwaukee, the whole team, and people were chanting MVP for him, and someone just quoted it and goes, most valuable poster. So, so sorry, I interrupted you there.
No, and man, what a cultural moment for the city, cultural moment for the country, I think, as far as basketball goes. In the last 10 years, basketball in Canada has gotten larger,
mm-hmm.
But it's still very much a Toronto-dominated or Toronto GTA area sport.
Yep.
And that has a lot to do with demographic, obviously.
Yep.
And I think, you know, when I say a cultural moment for the city of Toronto, that can't be understated, that because the city is fairly, very diverse,
yeah.
That a lot of new Canadians and new Canadians who are in the 20, maybe even younger, right, 15 to 30 something demographic, have found themselves attached to basketball,
right,
and to the Raptors. One, because of the cost of hockey.
It's also a far more global sport. Basketball.
It's a more global sport. It's a little easier to, you just can pick up and play.
Yep.
You need less of an introduction to the game itself. I don't think anybody that I know who's a Raptor fan, at least in the city of Toronto, is generally also a hockey fan, if not a Leaf fan as well. Although, you know, it's a city where people come to Toronto for jobs. So you have a lot more, you know, Alberta,
sure.
Albertans and who are, you know, they're Edmonton fans or Calgary fans or whatever they are, right? So,
yep.
But because it's, you know, we are the North and this is Canada's team, I do think there's more of an inclusivity to it. I don't find there's any resentment to people who are bandwagon jumpers, at least not from what I've gathered. Nobody I'm talking to is like, oh my God, you didn't live through the bad years with me. There's a lot more of, hey, this is amazing because of those bad years.
Right.
But there's not that same like, oh, you guys are just, you know, you guys are jumping on the bandwagon like a Golden State Warrior fan or anything like that. I think for the most part,
or like certain Golden State Warrior players.
Or like certain Golden State Warrior players, they're Kevin Durant.
For sure.
I do feel like Raptor fans are actually happy, right? We're excited that people are part of this.
You
now.
Finally found us, or
yeah. Right? Like it just took having the best player in the NBA possibly to
funny
get everybody
happened.
On board.
Well, and you know, I don't think anyone would ever make the argument 20 years ago that Vince Carter was the best player in the NBA. But there was a time where he might be the most exciting or the most popular, and
definitely the most exciting, probably the most popular. You're
yeah,
correct.
And so. We started 10 or 15 years after that to see what it did, right? We started seeing kids coming out of Toronto getting drafted. We started to see, you know, what that impact was of having this superstar in Toronto and what that did for Toronto basketball. And to a greater extent, I guess, Canada basketball. But really around Toronto, you started seeing these kids get drafted, you know, years later because they were 5, 8, 10 years old, whatever, watching Vince do his thing, and all of a sudden basketball was cool and I want to do that. And I think, if nothing else, I don't know how many of these fans, like, the fact that I'm fully engaged in this right now and I'm totally on board, does that mean on a Tuesday night in December I'm interested in watching, you know, Charlotte come in next year? Like, I'm probably not, right? Like, I don't know. But I do know that there are thousands of kids suddenly talking about basketball and watching this. And as you said, watching maybe the best player in the playoffs, certainly, has been a Toronto Raptor. How many of them are getting excited? How many of them are signing up for summer basketball programs? And I think what we saw with Vince could be repeated here in 5, 10, 15, 20 years again, right? With this surge suddenly of Canadians engaged in basketball like maybe they've never been before, man. It's unreal.
I think the best tweet I saw out of all the great tweets that were coming out of Toronto over the weekend, the best one I saw was, you know, family going to Costco 10 years from now. Come on, Kawhi number one, Kawhi number two, Kawhi number three, Kawhi number four. Let's go get our groceries.
And our size 15 shoes.
Yeah, exactly. And it kind of caught me a little off guard. But I think it speaks to what you're saying, right? You've got this... It was more than a game.
Mm-hmm. It was, and a moment. You
know, we talk about sports sometimes and how sports can, you know, cut through life and can bring people together. This was definitely one of those moments. I think this whole run has been part of that.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, and you know, if the Raptors had done this, that first run with DeRozan and Kyle, and it's big, but maybe not as big because there's not the suffering that goes along with it.
Right.
That this goes to the point, you know, why don't Leaf fans give up on the Leafs ever? Because suffering is part of sports.
Right.
It's almost like a little microcosm of life sometimes in general.
Yep.
And it makes it that much sweeter that now we're in this position.
But I think, if I can interrupt you, I think that makes it that much more sweeter for you, the hardcore, the guy who went through it. A lot of these kids and people like me, we're only kind of casually aware of that, right? Like, for the hardcore fan, absolutely this is sweeter than it would have been if it had happened the first time. But in terms of hooking all these extra people who probably barely ever watched before, I think this run, and I think even the fact that it's Kawhi instead of DeMar, right, because you have the superstar, that the clearly the best guy, that can excite people in a big way, right? And so I don't know if this is a long-term thing for those of us that are more casual. I think this is an exciting thing, and I want to be a part of this. And I put it out there on Twitter a couple of times afterwards and on our social media, you know, thanks to Raptors fans for not judging us, bandwagon people, and letting us be, because it was so much fun to watch, man. I get why for you this was sweeter because of the adversity that you'd had to overcome first. I think for a lot of the rest of us, it's just, holy fuck, look at that guy. Like, that guy's a killer, yeah. And he's dragging
us. Why is this guy so good at this sport?
Kicking and screaming into the finals. Like, it's unreal, man.
Now, I'll tell you, Matt, it was the first year, so we're talking about 5 years ago now, yeah. if I'm not mistaken, that the Raptors looked like they were going to tear it down, and they ended up making that insane run.
Yeah, they were going to tank for Wiggins.
They were going to tank for Wiggins.
Oh, we made the playoffs.
And then all of a sudden, they won their division. And they're in the playoffs.
Yeah.
You know, we lost to Brooklyn. That was the year that my aunt and my mother got on board.
Right.
They couldn't have cared less about basketball before that point.
Right.
And they fell in love with that team. And they would be texting me in the middle of the game being like, why is that a foul? What's going on here?
Right.
And they've become...
Oh, man, I could still send you some of those texts.
Oh, God. That's what I'm saying every game. I'm like, what? What's going...
Yeah.
You know, that's a constant in the NBA anyways. Sure. But, you know, and now they've gone from observers to fans.
Yeah.
You know, and they attend games every year. They enjoy going to the games. They love the atmosphere. They know the players. My aunt was particularly, she was telling me how she was going to boycott them because they traded DeRozan. You know, that, and that happened in 4 years, right?
Yeah. But
this is how it starts, right? And I'll tell you, I sat down for dinner with my family yesterday, and my grandmother asked me to send her the wallpaper for her phone of Kawhi, because she wanted the Kawhi wallpaper for the background of her phone.
Awesome.
You know, that my 80-year-old grandmother even has a cell phone.
Yeah, no,
sometimes
no kidding.
Trips me out, but
yeah.
She now has Kawhi as her background. And, you know, she, again, in the last couple of years, she's aware of them, but now she's fully bought in to what this team is.
Yeah, that's incredible, man.
And is very, you know, She wants to talk about it and she wants to engage in it. And I, you know, this is a woman who came from Mumbai back in the 60s.
Right.
Right. So you talk about people getting on to, you know, just jumping on the bandwagon. I don't think as Raptor fans, we look at it that way. It's just more people who are fans.
Yeah.
And we want more people as fans because a badge of honor for Raptor fans is we want people to watch, right?
Yeah.
We want people to be engaged. We want Kawhi to know that this is 37 million people who are watching you. Not, you know, not in San Antonio when you had like four.
Yeah.
Right. This is a bigger deal to be here. And this is why you don't want to leave, right? We want the NBA players to know that that's a difference. We want them to feel that in the crowd. And I think you see that on TV come across. The crowd has been absolutely fantastic.
Yes.
All playoff series long. And I think the only time I was lucky enough to be at five games so far this playoff run, the only time I felt the typical Toronto fandom nervousness was game three against Milwaukee when it went to double overtime.
Yeah, and you're down 0-2 in the series already. That's the series right there. You lose that,
yep.
You're done.
Yeah.
Instead, you come back, burn off four in a row against a team that hadn't lost three in a row all year.
And I can't remember if it was you I was talking to, Matt, or I know I mentioned this to a couple people, but I did feel going into game four that if we won game four, we were going to take him in six.
Wow.
And I felt that the Milwaukee Bucks had only lost two games in a row, one time all season.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a nothing stretch of their season on the road. And a team that had never faced adversity at all and had gone away most of the season injury free wasn't going to know how to handle adversity.
Right.
And, you know, a team that has a very young superstar.
Yep.
Who again, no adversity, no, you know, obviously life adversity coming
sure.
from, coming as a refugee and stuff into Greece and not even having his papers from Greece until they were sure he was going to get drafted.
Right.
But no NBA playoff, you know, what do you do when the chips are down type of adversity that Kawhi and Kyle have been through numerous times.
Yeah.
And you could see it in, I think it was game one. You saw it a bit, even though they won that game, but you saw it in game three for sure. And I, you know, different view live. Milwaukee just didn't know what to do in game three. They weren't sure who was supposed to take control, which seems silly when you have one of the top five players in the league on your team.
Well, and is that when they put Kawhi on Giannis?
And that is when they put Kawhi on Giannis.
So now you're like, do we still give it to him? Or do we, like, you're right. It seemed to really throw them in terms of what to run.
Yeah, they had no idea what to do because what they had been doing all year had always worked all year.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, your bread and butter is gone and they had no real answer. You know, a lot has been said about Nick Nurse as a rookie coach all season. And he definitely took his lumps against that Philly team.
Right.
He, man, whatever he did, you know, and maybe it was just saying, hey, Kawhi, you're our best player, shut down their best player.
Yep. But that in-series adjustment, man. Huge.
What a difference that made. And against Milwaukee, who Mike Budenholzer, and we've talked about this on the pod before, chose to go to Milwaukee over Toronto in the offseason.
He was in line here.
Right? I mean, Masai actually flew down to talk to him personally, try to get him on board. He chose to go coach Milwaukee over Toronto. And everybody says, you know, well, Nick Nurse was our second choice. Yeah, he was our second choice, but I think he showed in this playoff series that he was just as good of a choice.
Right.
And I think he earned his keep here. I think he definitely earned his keep because he showed that he belongs as a head coach in the NBA right now.
It's true, man. And, you know, it's not something we need to get into tonight, but he seems to be buying in here as news came out this week that he has agreed to coach Canada at the World Cup this summer. So that's pretty cool as well. Like, he's kind of buying into, you know, this We the North thing and everything that goes along with that. We want to tee up the final here a little bit, but before we do, a couple other things I want to touch on. Man, what do you think of what happened in the streets of Toronto after the game, where it was just thousands upon thousands of people outside the arena, outside Union, up and down Blue Jay Way, up and down Front? Like, I don't know how far it stretched up north of the arena, but certainly in the immediate area, it was madness. And You could see pictures coming up online everywhere. You could see videos. We posted some of them at Talkin Audio on Instagram. And it was all peaceful. It's people, it's strangers high-fiving and hugging and cars all honking and all this stuff. You know, there was some great stuff that people posted. I can't remember. One of the Raptors now actually posted on his Instagram him trying to drive out of the arena and the number of people pounding on his car and stuff. It was awesome. And the thing that I want to get to before I let you weigh in on this, because fuck you, Vancouver, and fuck you, Montreal. The Toronto
exactly.
Police Department posted afterwards that there had been zero arrests because nobody did anything crazy. Nobody needed to burn anything. Nobody needed to flip anything. It was just thousands of people. And you absolutely know there were a pile of bandwagon fans there too, not just the hardcores, but they all were there for the same reason. It was a party. It was pro Toronto. They had done something awesome. Man, it was quite a scene. I know you were at a house party. I know the streets were gridlocked. Was there any part of you that was like, we have to get over and be a part of that? Or did you just want to steer clear?
Absolutely not. I wanted nothing to do with that bedlam. No part of me wanted to get out there and get into that that mess that was going on. I loved it.
Yeah.
I love seeing it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm getting a little bit older. I don't need to be, you know, maybe Matt 5 years ago would have been like, let's be down there. But yeah, nothing wanted to be part of that that bedlam. I enjoyed watching everybody's videos. I love the fact that nobody was arrested. There was no real issues going on.
I saw a great tweet that it was like Toronto police reported that 4 mailboxes were almost knocked over. 8 people bumped into each other and forgot to say sorry.
Yeah.
Like just stupid shit like that, right? Like, 8 spitters, right?
Yeah. 8 people didn't put their cigarettes out in the right spots.
So.
I think that tells you as well what the vibe of that celebration was as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
This was a happy, I mean, obviously it's a happy thing when your team wins to go into the NBA final.
Yeah.
But it just tells you that, you know, maybe the type of people Raptor fans are right now. And it's not that in 20 years they're not going to be a bunch of dicks like they are in Vancouver. But right now this was a celebration right through. And I think everybody understood it was a city celebration, right?
Yeah.
This is the Raptors, but this is very much a moment for Toronto.
And you mentioned the diversity, right? Around the Raptors fan base, Toronto, certainly the most multicultural city in the country. More immigrants per capita than almost any city in North America. And it's got this weird reputation of being unsafe. But that's a per capita thing, right? You wake up and if there's 2 murders in Kingston tomorrow, that's a killing spree because
yes.
of the population, right? 2
yeah.
murders in Toronto, it's still bad. And there aren't two murders a night in Toronto, I'm not saying. But when it's 5 million people, it's a very, like, it's a safe city, man. And to see how many people of that many different backgrounds and all kinds of stuff were all just coexisting and loving life together, man, it was super cool to watch and was just a poster for the city, right? Like,
yeah.
of how these cultures and how these things can all coexist.
I can't tell you the last time I felt worried being in Toronto.
Right.
I actually can't tell you, and I've lived here my whole life.
Any Leaf?
I live and work downtown. You know, I'll tell you this, though. The only time I ever thought, gosh, this is not going to be good for a sporting event was when we lost Game 7 back with the 3-1 lead.
Lead
or 4-1
yeah,
lead. Thank
yeah.
you.
Yep.
And I remember it happening and thinking, you know, Vancouver was fresh on everybody's mind at that point.
Yeah.
And I remember sitting in a bar and going, man, this is going to be awful. And I left the bar.
I did the same.
And everybody just looked depressed. There was nobody writing.
Right.
There was nobody angry. It was just absolute depression. It looked like one of those zombie movies.
I don't know. I think I've told the story on the pod before. I was watching it at Real Sports here in Ottawa, and it was the night after Mother's Day. And my mom wanted to go out and watch it. And so my sister
yes.
and I took her out. And we're watching the game, and they're like, oh my God, it's 4-1. This is going to happen. But as Boston starts climbing back into it, some drunk idiots from Ottawa, from Montreal, like what, who hate the Leafs, are now running up to my table and screaming in our faces, fuck Toronto and stuff like this, right? And this is just at a tie game. So when the period ends, we've already paid our bill because we thought we were done. And I said, let's go. And my mom's like, well, why don't we just stay and watch? I'm like, we don't want to be here. But, and that's as much as a hockey fan as a, it's like, you don't get to blow 4-1 leads and then still win in overtime. I knew what was about to happen, and we don't need to be here when it does, right? It was a bad scene. And to see, obviously, when the Raptors won, it's a totally different vibe in terms of celebration. But you can see it only takes a couple of bad eggs to start lighting shit on fire or start screaming and starting shit. And to see that that didn't happen was just awesome, man.
And it's tough, right? Because like you said, it's you need one or two bad, bad apples to ruin it for everybody. So part of me was, you know, a little surprised that nothing bad had happened.
Yeah. And who knows? Maybe there was one or two shitheads and the cops just sent somebody home or break it up and whatever, right? But the fact that it was all, no one broke any windows, no one flipping cars, right? Like nothing serious.
Yeah. And typically at the end of all these games in the playoffs, the police presence has been fairly good.
Yeah.
They've been doing a really good job of shutting streets down for the pedestrians. They've been doing a really great job of you know, corralling everybody. There's always police around that you can see, but they're never being intimidating about it. They're, even after every game I've been to, there's been chants as people are leaving and cheering as people are leaving. And the cops are just there, right? They're not being intimidating. They're not being dicks about it at all.
Yeah.
And letting everybody have their fun.
Yeah. Well, what was it?
Maybe that's very Canadian. Maybe that's very Torontonian of everybody. But I thought they've been doing a fairly good job of it. And I mean, everybody online has seen the pictures. It is no longer just Jurassic Park. This goes back. This goes back blocks in the city now.
Yeah.
For these viewing parties.
You mentioned offline, like you mentioned before we started the show, that the weather was shit in Toronto that day. And our boy Steve Dangle there, he posted on his Twitter and in a couple different places. He had arrived in Toronto for something, for Jurassic Park and all that stuff. He said it was because you have to get let into Jurassic Park. And because of the lightning, the cops weren't letting people in as early as they normally do. And he said the line just to stand outside and watch on the big screen was going back around three sides of Union Station, which for those familiar with Toronto was just a gigantic. And by the time that game was over, as you said, it was going blocks and blocks back down. Is it John? I can't remember the street that it is there, but Bremner.
Bremner, yeah.
Yeah. And like just thousands upon thousands of people standing in the rain, watching it on TV. And I loved that they kept flashing to, you know, you see it when the Leafs score a goal, right? In the playoffs, they go to Maple Leaf Square, but there's so much time, right? After goals before they're going to drop the puck again. You have time for all that replay, all that everything. But after huge buckets, they were still flashing out, and you could just see, especially as the game was getting later and later on, you know, one of the things we haven't mentioned, the Raps were down by 15 with 2 minutes to go in the third quarter. It did not look good. And these people stayed all the way through it, these thousands of people, and ended up getting rewarded for it. And man, watching the party was awesome, man. It was really cool.
Well, I'll tell you, I mentioned to you off air. At about 2 o'clock, one of my friends decided to just check out the local bar scene, and just a number of people who were still in their Raptor gear.
Yeah, two a.m.
for those keeping track at home. The number of people still in their Raptors gear, including us.
Yeah,
and people coming up, strangers just coming up and saying to you, "Man, what a game!"
Yeah.
I can't believe this. This was amazing. I think we've got a chance. We could do this. Like the love in the city, it wasn't an angry, you know, no, even though people definitely had their wobbly pops all night long at that point, it was a very friendly, loving vibe. And people were just coming up. People without jerseys were coming up and just being like, what a game. You know, when you had your Raptor gear on, it was something very special in the city that night.
Did you see, I don't know what the vibe was like at the party at your place. There was just a couple of us here, so it was a little quieter. When they kept showing the celebrities that were in attendance, the one that got the loudest cheer was Bismack Biyombo, which was awesome, right? Like, and it just shows if you give your all as a Raptor, you don't have to be a superstar. They'll love you. They'll remember you forever. If John McDonald had been in the building, the place would have lost their mind, right? So,
I mean, that goes without saying, right? Yeah. I mean, everybody loves Johnny Mac.
For sure. So,
This is Toronto, right? We love our blue collar heroes.
Our grinders. Before we get into the final, the one last thing, it was cool to see Kyle Lowry get his moment. Some of these people who've been around for a while, to me, I loved the couple of times that they showed Masai Ujiri. For those, you know, new to the Raptors, he's the president, but essentially also the GM. And he's the one who last summer fired a coach of the year and traded the team's best and probably most popular player, one who had signed to stay in Toronto when so many superstars wouldn't. Tough decisions. For sure. That ends up bringing them Nick Nurse, who we've mentioned already, made some key adjustments in the series and certainly brought them Kawhi Leonard, who, you know, the thing was criticized up and down that would he, like, he wasn't excited to come. Would he stay longer than a year? All of that. And sure enough, he shows up. He is everything he's advertised to be and has been unbelievable in these playoffs. So much talk, and maybe we can get into this on a different episode because we'll get bogged down here a little bit, that maybe he is the best athlete to ever play in Toronto, and you could make a good argument for it. But Masai Ujiri took some risks here. He took some heat here, all of it trying to do the impossible, which was win in Toronto in the NBA. And they are obviously now as close as they've ever been, and I think with a legitimate chance to, if nothing else, make it interesting. Man, it's been quite a year for Masai Ujiri.
Yeah, and you know, fortune favors the bold, I suppose, right?
Yep.
How many times do we see a guy get signed to a contract that ends up bogging that team down, right?
Yep.
Because he's our guy, so we reward them.
Yep.
To look at that team and a team that had posted the most wins, I think for like 4 years in a row, they continually won more games than anything. Last year was the first time they won the East. And then you fire that coach.
Yeah.
And listen, you've heard me rant about Coach Casey, and
yep.
I was on board with firing the guy. Don't get me wrong.
But not
it's
an
still
easy
a
decision.
Huge PR move.
Yep.
And although a lot of diehard Raptor fans felt that that was the right move, a lot of casual fans did not, because they didn't understand why you would fire that guy. A lot of casual fans did not understand why you would trade your star player, who's been an all-star player, right? Consistently an all-star in the league.
Yeah.
And a guy who continually got better every single year since he's been drafted. And a guy who committed himself, like you said, not only to the team but to the country, for a team that has always struggled to keep their star players.
Yeah. It's cutthroat business, man.
And unfortunately, I mean, you're not going to get Kawhi Leonard for a bag of pucks and a couple draft picks, right? You have to give up a guy like DeMar DeRozan, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And it might have been amazing to somehow have kept him on this team, because I think as a second or third star, he's probably where he needs to be.
Right.
But to get a guy like Kawhi Leonard, and we talked about this in the summer when the big news was John Tavares coming to Toronto.
Yeah.
We thought, what, like, this is, when was the last time this happened?
Yep.
But I know we talked about it in saying Kawhi was a bigger deal across North America.
Yep.
Because of
that's
how
right.
Big
I remember having that conversation. Yeah. That both these guys were coming to Toronto. I think Kawhi was only 4 or 5 days after Tavares signing that was announced. And it was all of a sudden this huge, oh my God, right? Like, look at these guys.
Yeah.
And yeah, that Tavares got all the attention, but outside of Toronto, certainly outside of Canada, Kawhi was the big fish, right? And
we're talking about a guy who, before his knee injury last year, was consistently called the second to third best player in that conversation with KD and LeBron James.
Right.
Right. And guys like that do not move.
No, you don't get a chance to get those guys. And when you really look at it, I'm not trying to be a shithead about DeMar, because he was a good, you know, what, soldier here, and people loved him. But he is firmly in that second or third tier of stars. And the fact that you were able to bring in Kawhi at all without having to give up more. At the time, all the talk was that you didn't have to give up OG, right? Was that everyone assumed would have to go the other way. And
really, or Siakam.
Or Siakam, right? And you know, he sort of came alive in the second half of the series, as did Van Vliet, as did a bunch of guys. But the fact that you were able to keep this team together and to swap out DeMar for Kawhi was unbelievable. And you know, this is, I don't know what's about to happen in the next couple of weeks here, but I know that those bold moves that Masai Ujiri made are the reason that they're here. And I don't know if you had a chance to see it. There was an article on Sportsnet where they interviewed Alex Anthopoulos. And he's been a longtime Raptors fan, you know, since long before he was the GM of the Blue Jays. And just saying, the thing that people have to understand is, as you mentioned, Maddie, that fortune favors the bold. You put yourself out there when you make that move. If you don't get this far and he leaves in the summer, everybody gets to point their finger at you and go, you fucked up. And if you didn't do it, chances are nobody ever would have known, right? No one knew that you wouldn't have, that you had a chance to do it. No one knew that you might have traded for Kawhi or might have traded away DeMar. You could have kept this team together, easily made the playoffs again, easily made it another two or three rounds again, and stayed good. But you weren't going to win. You weren't going to be great. So you could have easily done that, and everyone would have been okay with it. What he did was unpopular at the time, and here we are almost a year later, and the Raptors are in the NBA final. Took a huge set of stones, man, and I got tons of respect for that.
Full marks for that, right? And, you know, I haven't seen that article. It's interesting you bring that up. It's interesting that they went to Anthopoulos to get that.
Yep.
Because he's a guy who the Toronto media, also owned by the team, may have thrown him under the bus after two amazing years as with the Jays. And I know he was only here for the first one, but he set that team up for both those years.
Yep.
And the team stopped at nothing, even while they were in the playoffs, to throw him under the bus to say, we're not set up properly because of the moves he's made. Meanwhile, the fans are selling out
the 50,000 seat
arena.
Jerseys and hats everywhere. Ratings are through the roof.
And I don't know any Jays fans that are upset that we had those two great years and now we have some shitty years. Are they upset we're shitty now?
Yeah. It was 19-4 on Saturday. I was pretty upset, man.
Nobody was upset at the time.
No, it's true.
And listen, it was similar. It had been like 25 years between good Blue Jay teams.
Yep, that's right.
I was all in to trade whoever we were going to trade to get David Price.
Yeah.
And Tulowitzki. That was you don't get stars for nothing. And the worst thing in sports is prospects.
Yeah.
Because you really don't know what they are
ever.
Well,
you always overvalue your own, right? Our prospects are better than everyone else. And who the fuck knows, man? They're magic beans, right? Like
everybody but Vladdy anyways.
Yeah. Well, no, that's true. And now Kevin Piggio's up here doing his thing, so.
That's right. And, you know, I've obviously had this conversation a lot at work and with some friends, and diehard Raptor fans are all okay after this, and even just being in that Eastern Conference final, everybody was good with, even if Kawhi leaves, this was the right move.
Right.
Because there's a confidence when you're at the stadium now. You feel like down 15, like you said, 2 minutes left in the third quarter. At the party, we were all saying, we just got to get it to 10. If we get it to 10, we've got this. We're going to come back. Kawhi's not going to let us lose.
Wow.
We had this. There's just a quiet confidence on this team right now. And like you joked, you know, Kawhi is going to get you there kicking and screaming. But the fan base in Toronto, and you know how fickle the Toronto fan base can be in any sport, always expecting the worst. I've never in my 35 years experienced Toronto fans being confident
right.
that we were going to win a game. Down by 15, no less. It was just like, okay, let's close this quarter out. Let's get those 5 points back. We've got this, right? Because, you know, in basketball, especially with the three ball now, 10 points is probably what 6 points used to be back in the day. You know, it's an overinflated number because you know you can hit those threes.
Right.
so to us watching the game, we were like, this is good. We've got this. This is not even a problem at this point, right? We know if we put a little pressure on this team, it's going to happen, which is something that you never felt when DeMar was on that team.
I wish I'd have been at your party because I was far less confident here. It just seemed like all game long, right? They'd fall down 10, they'd get it back to 3, and then Milwaukee go on another run. Like, it was a horribly frustrating game for 3 quarters. And then in the fourth, it was just, I don't want to call it a beatdown, but I mean, it was all Toronto in the fourth, right? Like,
which is just so rare for us to experience.
Well, and watching like a couple games in this series, the thing that always struck me as someone, you know, trying hard to get into basketball, but never really able to do it, was how often you just went down and scored. Like, it just sort of happened. But that's because we weren't good defensively. So that was happening both ways. This team, and Kawhi especially, obviously, I saw more plays broken up in this series and you know, turnovers that you'd take back. And even if you didn't score, you stopped them from doing it way more than I'm accustomed to seeing in a basketball game. Like, this team's been very good defensively.
Matt, you know, you brought up that dunk, the posterization of Giannis.
Yeah.
But, you know, there was another play that really caught me off guard, and it was during the fourth quarter. And, you know, a couple beers in afterwards, at least, or beforehand. I don't quite remember the exact time it happened, but Milwaukee was up. It was a close game, and they went to make a pass, and Kawhi's big-ass hand just came out of nowhere to tip the ball. And I just, like, it was this moment of euphoria in my head thinking, you know, the old Raptors don't do that.
Right.
Right? The old Raptors can't make that stop because only a player like Kawhi can make that stop.
Right.
And that's where I go back to that confidence as a Raptor fan. You knew he was going to do something. You knew he was going to take the ball away a couple times in the fourth quarter. And guys like Kyle feed off that. And he's able to make more stops now. And man, again, just this team's on a magical run right now.
Yeah.
I know you want to tee up the NBA Finals, and maybe this is a good segue because I really like this is a dynasty we're going up against.
Yep.
And I'm not sure Raptor fans would want it any other way.
I would. I'd like to see somebody much weaker on the other side. As somebody new to this, I'd love to be facing a nobody who somehow squeaked through, right?
I mean, don't get me wrong. If it was Portland, we'd be ecstatic as well. But I do think this is a Golden State team, and you know, in series one against the Clippers, they, you know, it got taken to 6, and everybody said, "Oh, look at this team, great for the taking."
Yeah.
And then we thought, "Oh, never mind." And then KD goes down with his calf strain, which is definitely worse than they thought it was, or initially were letting on. Everybody said, "Oh, they're ripe for the taking."
I bet they got good doctors in New York.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. And we were all wrong about that. They just went on another run against Portland.
Yeah.
This isn't going to be easy. I don't think this is going to be a sweep. Almost as bad as a sweep would be the gentleman sweep, you know, letting us have one game because they just feel like it.
Right.
I told you my. My head says Golden State in 6. My heart says Raptors in 7. That is a total bias.
Raptors in 4.
Yeah. Yeah. There definitely seems to be something with Golden State, and they do seem more right for the taking than in years past. And that's not saying much because this, again, is a dynasty.
Mm-hmm.
There's not many teams that can lose their best player and still have another 3 top 10 NBA players on their roster, for God's sakes.
Yeah.
They're not a very deep team.
Can you put this in perspective? I saw this on Twitter today. I thought it was interesting. I'd like you to take it and tweak it if you think there's a better example. And forget the result, but for those of us that are coming into this a little more casual, someone said, you know, what is the NHL equivalent of this?
Oh.
And the first answer I saw was it was this year's Tampa versus Columbus. Now, I'm not saying that because we're hoping that the Raptors are Columbus and they sweep the Lightning. You know, that was crazy. But Tampa was stacked, and Columbus was a good team who got hot. I don't know if I love that analogy, because Columbus also didn't really have the superstar like the Raptors do, right? But I get what they're going for, that Tampa just was overflowing with talent, and that's sort of Golden State. And maybe the Raptors are, you know, are obviously not quite that. Is that an okay analogy? Can you think of a better one?
Ooh, I don't love that analogy, because Columbus doesn't have that star player.
Yeah.
I was trying to go back maybe, 20 years or so. I'm thinking more, trying to think of one of those, you know, up and coming teams, but the Raptors aren't exactly up and coming anymore at this point.
Right. What about the 99 Cup? I don't know how much, but it was Dominic Hasek who carried the Sabres, and a Stars team that had loaded up. It had Nieuwendyk, it had Hull, it had Modano, it had Hatcher, it had Belfour, and they were loaded and stacked and ready to kill it. Buffalo was an okay team, but only had really gotten there on the back of Dominic Hasek. Is that an okay?
Yeah, and you know, it's funny you go back to that. I was thinking around the same time, like those early 90s teams. I was trying to think of, like, didn't want to go to like Florida, but like, yeah, with Van Beesbrook and stuff.
Yeah, that's true.
I was thinking wasn't there a Washington team that did something similar?
Yeah, Joey Juno's Washington Capitals in 98. Yeah.
Yeah, like against the Red Wings. Like that, right? Yeah, that goes against that dynasty team is what I was trying to I was trying to pinpoint that dynasty team, and I was trying to think those guys who went against the Red Wings.
Yeah, the Flyers in 97 and the Caps in 98. Lindros carried them in 97, and 98 was more of a weird one, but
yeah, I'm thinking more like that, where you've got that team that's just absolutely stacked and another star team that maybe caught a couple lucky breaks along the way,
right?
To make it happen. That's more where I think we fall into.
Yeah, I like that.
I think going into the Western Conference Finals, you would have said the Portland Trailblazers would have been the Columbus Blue Jackets, smashed, unfortunately for them. But that's probably more that type of analogy, because I think everybody's looking at the result of Columbus more than actual Columbus going into that.
No, exactly. And that's I wasn't trying to paint a picture of the Raptors sweeping Golden State. It was more just the style of matchup, right? And so I think this is going to be interesting. I do think maybe people are more confident than I would have expected in terms of the Raptors' chances here, but I haven't seen any outlets, whether it be, you know, your ESPNs or your Fox Sports or anything like that. I haven't seen any of your Bodogs and your gambling outlets. I haven't seen anyone pick Toronto other than Charles Barkley, I guess, on TNT. But
well, he's our man.
Yeah, for sure. He's digging Toronto.
At this point, he's going to get his permanent residency.
Yeah, no, I think so too, man. But, you know, what has to happen for Toronto to drag this out, to have a chance?
So the last time that Kawhi Leonard played the Golden State Warriors in the playoffs, he was obviously with San Antonio.
Yep.
He was on a San Antonio team with an old Tim Duncan, an old Manu Ginobili, an older Tony Parker.
Right. Francis Finest.
Francis Finest. Hey, I'm not even sure I want to say that, to be honest with you.
All right, well, I'm not married.
He's up there. Maybe, you know, body work, he's probably up there.
All right.
I'm a big Rudy Gobert fan, though. Ooh. The Eiffel Tower down the middle in Utah there.
All right.
Listen, I remember watching the game live for whatever reason. They were up on Golden State after three quarters. And Kawhi caught a pass, went for a three ball, and Zaza Pachulia put his foot underneath him, and he landed on his foot, rolled his ankle. That was the series. Yeah. And I don't think anybody thought at that point Kawhi was going to drag San Antonio to a win. But you take game one and you don't know what else happens after that.
Yeah. True.
I want to say, now maybe that was, I'm trying to think now in my head, was that after their loss to Cleveland, or that was the year they lost to Cleveland? Either way, they were obviously the favorite team. They were obviously the sweethearts at that time.
Yeah.
I don't think they were the dynasty at that time. I think everybody was hoping they were going to be the dynasty, because everybody just fell in love with Golden State at that point. I don't think they're you know, they're no longer the darlings of the NBA as much as they might have been at that time.
Okay.
I think because everybody, like you said, wants to jump on their bandwagon as players, we know that Kevin Durant's out for game one for sure.
What does that do to them? Because I've read a lot of stuff that says they're not as talented, but maybe they're a more cohesive team without him.
And it's tough. Okay. That's what I've thought. But I also think that, you know, the games he missed were against a Portland team.
Yeah.
That were far less talented.
Yeah.
And far less skilled than the Houston team that they had to beat with him in the lineup before he got hurt.
Right.
And I don't think they beat Houston without him. And he definitely stole a couple games in Houston.
Yeah.
Or against the Houston Rockets. They needed him to go toe-to-toe with James Harden in a couple games.
Right.
Steph Curry is obviously a generational talent. Klay Thompson's almost overshadowed.
Yeah,
and on any sure. other team, he would probably be the star player.
Yeah, he'd be the number one.
It's almost that excessive riches, right? Where he's the Scottie Pippen, right? And if the year that Michael Jordan retired, Chicago Bulls still won 55 games, right?
Like, yeah, like, exactly.
Oh, you're actually only worth 7 wins, right. You know? Like, you're not that big, you know? Like,
right.
Because the rest of the team really is that talented. You got a guy like Draymond Green who just absolutely dominated on defense. What needs to happen for the Raptors? Kyle needs to play his ass off. The bench needs to play like it did the last 2 games in that series. We need Fred. We need Norm.
Fuck, we need Danny Green.
If Danny Green can bust out of this slump over the next 4 days, that would be a huge move for the Raptors. You know, you need Marc Gasol hitting his shots. Serge Ibaka has to be more reliable. Just everything has to go right for the Raptors.
Right.
Right. And you need Steph Curry to have an off game, which he does from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we talked about
him to have 4.
We need him to have 4 bad ones, generally speaking. You know, you need Klay Thompson to maybe have a couple bad games along there as well. Or not even bad games, just average games, right? Where the Golden State Warriors, again, for the casual fans who have just, you know, known the Golden State Warriors are great, that's, you know, that misses the point a little bit because they've been in games where they've been down. They've been in series when they've been down. And what always happens is, you know, and it happened in Portland the last 2 games. They were down 15 points in both those games.
Mm-hmm.
And then Klay Thompson or Steph Curry just went,
all right,
it's
already, we go.
Give me the ball 5 times from the 3 ball.
Yeah.
And they just swing a game. They swing a series like that, right? They're going to need Nick Nurse to manage the game amazingly, right? It's going to be a tough, tough series for the Raptors. And that's why, you know, as much as I want to be optimistic, I don't see the Raptors winning. I'd love them to drag it out, though.
Yeah.
I'd love them to put themselves in a position to scare Golden State, because maybe that, you know, and maybe that changes things. And we know, you know, Golden State's all but lost Kevin Durant for next year. They don't have any financial wiggle room. Klay Thompson's also a free agent this year.
Yeah, they're going to have a hard time keeping that squad together.
Maybe, you know, optimistically, maybe this changes things for the free agency this class this year, right? Maybe this opens the Raptors up to something or another trade that a player who might otherwise not have come here decides to come here.
Well, especially, I don't know what's going to happen with Kawhi. Maybe he's already made up his mind. Maybe he hasn't. But the one thing that's interesting, and you could see this either way, if the Raptors win the title, what's left for him to do here? Go home to the Clippers and you know, enjoy Southern California. But if they lose, we're this close. We made it to the final. There's something to accomplish here. There's a reason to come back, right? Like, maybe that opposite thinking is actually, and especially as you point out, if he's staying, maybe someone wants to come and play with him. And, you know, maybe things end up being a little tighter than we expect. I don't know. But I think, obviously, I'm not cheering for the Raptors to lose. But I think there might be an argument to be made for the idea that you have a better chance of keeping him if you don't win. There's something still to accomplish here.
I mean, that being said, I will 100% take that goddamn trophy.
Of course, and then let him go, right? Head back to the Clippers, whatever you want to do, man. Thanks for your year. We appreciate it.
He's still getting his goddamn statue at the front of
absolutely,
that stadium, let me tell you.
For sure. We're pushing and over Teeter Kennedy and putting Kawhi right there.
I don't know if it would be better if they just built the bronze statue while he's still playing right beside Borjasami.
Sure.
Or if they just built him a new one right beside it, but also build it with him dunking over Giannis.
I was going to say, like, they should have asked before Giannis got on the flight back to Milwaukee for him to pose for, like, the body clay measurements and stuff like that. We need you out here for a second. But no, it's interesting, man. The last thing on this, or doesn't have to be, what is your, who would you put Kawhi on in this series, and who do you think they would want to put on Kawhi, and do you think that's going to mesh up, right? Like, how is that matchup going to go?
I think they're going to use a combination of Klay and Draymond.
Okay.
I think Klay out on the perimeter, he's a guy, and again, to say he's underrated is only because he's on the team that he's on.
Right.
He is one of the best perimeter players in the absolute league, and he can shut people down fairly easily. If they get inside, it's going to be Draymond, or at least Draymond, I think, will move over to support whatever is happening.
Right.
Draymond's that kind of, like, you know, 10 years ago, nobody would have known what to do with him. Now they use him as that kind of oversized 4, undersized 5. Obviously, great defensive player. He's going to get calls. Klay's going to get his calls. It's going to be a very, very tough series for Kawhi.
Yeah.
And if the other guys in the Raptors don't pick up their game, it's not going to be a fun series for Raptor fans.
Right.
So, you know, we go back to, what do we need to go right? We need guys hitting those three balls, right? We need them to force them to spread out a little bit.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think if I would see any who else they would put on Kawhi, but I think they're.
Well, who would
I don't
you,
think they're going to screw
you
around.
Want? Who do you want to put Kawhi on going the other way, right? Like, coming at you, how do you want that matchup to go?
I might say it's going to be Klay as well.
Yeah.
And occasionally maybe switching to Steph Curry.
Right.
But you know what? I've been to a couple games here in Toronto when Golden State's in town. Him and Kyle go back and forth pretty well. There's been games, I remember seeing one game maybe 2 or 3 years ago where Golden State won by 2 points, and the difference was Steph had 2 extra points than Kyle.
Right.
Kyle tends to play him very well. Steph isn't a great defender by anybody's means, and Kyle is that big body that can bully him around a little bit.
Yeah.
So I think you're going to just see that point guard and point guard matchup there. It's going to be interesting when when they have to sub in Fred, when they have to sub in Norm Powell, what they're going to do. But I do think we're going to see both 5-man starting lineups play a lot of this series.
Nothing left to rest for.
Nothing else to rest for. The rest between games seems to be, you know, fairly long. And a couple. Yeah, there's a couple games that are a little bit long in between. I think specifically between game 2 and game 3, there's quite a long break.
Yeah. It's a long flight to California. I guess.
Yeah, that private flight.
Yeah, no, yeah, I know. It's got to be
tough life they have, right?
Yeah.
Man, I'm trying to think, like, who else do we put on them, right? And, like, wow. Luckily enough, we have some length. I could see a guy like Pascal maybe defending Draymond. Draymond, you just want him not to get his points, right? You're gonna let him take his 3-ball. You're gonna challenge him to shoot a little bit. You just want to worry about him when he's inside. You don't want to give him those open passes.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see. You know, one thing Milwaukee did in Game 6, which I thought was actually to their detriment, was they continually committed to putting 2 to 3 guys on Kawhi as he drove.
Mm-hmm.
And that kept opening up. And down to that last minute where, you know, you just wanting to get 2 points, right? You just want to keep putting it out of reach. I looked at somebody and said, they're going to get it to Pascal, right? They're like, who we got? We want Kawhi to take the shot. I said, no, it's going to be Pascal. And everybody in the room looked at me and said, because he's going to be the one open by the net.
Right.
Right? Like, they're going to forget about him because they're going to collapse on Kawhi. And it's exactly what happened. He kicked the ball back out, and Pascal was right under the rim. And it happened 2 or 3 plays in a row. And Milwaukee just stuck to their guns about taking Kawhi.
Well, you can't blame him, right? Like,
you can't. You let the other guys beat you, right? Yeah. You don't want it to be that guy beats you. And I also understand that, especially after game 3 where, you know, you saw Pascal miss some really big free throws. And, you know, in game 6, he learned his lesson and and hit his shots basically, right? So he still doesn't get any goddamn calls under the bucket, which drives me nuts. But that being said, you know, that's what the Raptors are going to need to do, right? They're not going to have to – they can't live and die by Kawhi. He's going to have to do more than just get 30 points. He's going to have a nice even stat line with a lot of assists and a lot of rebounds for this to even happen.
Right.
And we're going to have to really be able to, you know, manage the game properly and not let Golden State go on those 10-0 runs, those 12-0 runs that they've lived and died by, right?
Yeah.
You got to be able to shut them down. Hopefully Kawhi is between Kawhi and Danny Green and Pascal defensively, we're strong enough to limit those runs.
Games 1, 3, 5, and 7 on Sportsnet. Games 2, 4, and 6 on TSN for those I've been asked a couple times on Twitter. Anything else you want to say about this series or this team before we kind of wrap this one up? I think, you know, we'll likely do another show or two as the series rolls on. But before it fires up on Thursday night, anything else you want to get out there?
I am not a particularly religious man. But for any of you at home who are religious, pray to whoever the big man in the sky is for you. Because we need all the help we're going to get.
Or woman. Could be the big woman in the
or
sky.
Or woman.
Yeah, whatever you
neutral,
got going on.
Neutral God.
Yeah. What do you got?
I'm not opposed. Just send it up there.
What do you got on the blog?
Nothing really, thankfully, and hopefully for the rest of the playoffs, I don't have to do any other injury blogs.
Certainly not
for the NBA.
Players.
Definitely not any Raptor players. If I had to do a sprained ankle for Steph Curry, I wouldn't be upset about it.
End of the world.
Yeah, I definitely get that up day of. In between the game, I might type that up. So right now we're kind of moving back to some exercise-based stuff, prevention stuff. So, fingers crossed, nothing injury wise, because you don't want any team to win like that. Not after the playoffs we've had this year.
Foundation Physio also has grown a little bit over the last little while. Do you want to promote the new location, anything like that? Or
always appreciate that, man. Anybody in Toronto, we've been around for 8 years now. We just opened up clinic number 3 in Corktown, which is on the east side. So that's where King and Queen meet. Brand new digs, beautiful, beautiful spot we built, and all your physio, chiro, massage needs, we're there for you guys.
Awesome. The NBA Finals start up on Thursday night, as I said, on Sportsnet. If you're not doing so already, you're going to want to make sure you're following at Matthew Lang on Twitter. He's at Matt Does Physio on Instagram. We are at Tall Can Audio on both. As always, my man, appreciate you doing this. And this has been cool. Mentioned it online, you know, certainly on Saturday. As someone who's gotten on board with this late, it was really cool to watch people like you get the chance to do this, right? And get the chance to see, you know, I mentioned it and not everybody took kindly to it, but I think most people understood what I meant when I said that for a long time, this Raptors team was the ugly stepchild to the Leafs and, not anymore, right? The eyes of the world are on the Toronto Raptors. They have the superstar. They are in the NBA Finals. And over the last several years, they've grown the fan base, grown the brand, consistent contenders. Man, they've stepped out and made their own world, and it's been cool to watch, and it's been cool to watch people like yourself who've been fans, as you said, since the Dome and since TJ Ford and all the shit that went on, man. Since who's that crazy ass coach that was around the turn of the century? Yeah, you know who.
Lenny Wilkins?
Yes.
You thinking Lenny?
Yeah, I am. I remember it was a big deal when he came, and then things got weird.
Oh, yeah. Man, for let me tell you this. Man, you're old enough to remember this, but for anybody who's old, our age group, old,
yeah,
who grew up in the Toronto area, used to get, like, free tickets to go to Skydome and, like, pizza boxes and stuff like
that.
Yeah,
you could buy tickets at convenience stores and drug stores.
It's a wild, absolute turn. And it's been such a ride, and like I said, this is no longer a niche sport in Toronto.
Yeah.
And it's no longer a niche fan group in Toronto. And man, the more the merrier. Want everybody to have this fun.
And you know, right now, the cheapest ticket to the game that MLSE is selling is $700 to sit in the 300s. It's a lot of money. But no one's talking about the fact that in Oakland, you see, they call themselves Golden State because I don't want to admit they're from Oakland. It's $700 American for the worst seat there. During the Stanley Cup Finals in 2011 in Vancouver, it was $1,800 for a standing room ticket. It sucks, but that's not – you're not being gouged. I mean, you are, but it's at market value, right? This isn't This is now a basketball town. There's enough demand in a city of 5 million people. That's what a ticket goes for. And like you said, they don't just come inside pizza boxes anymore.
That's right. And you know what? It just as a last point that I meant, even for the Eastern Conference Final, you know, I thought the prices were fairly reasonably priced because even on the secondary market, they weren't that much more expensive.
Right.
They were
what the market will bear.
Slightly more than the market value, the ticket price was on your ticket.
Yeah.
Now they're a little bit more expensive than that.
Sure.
Obviously, after that game, you know, the prices were going to go up quite huge. Yeah. We'll see. If we get this to game five, you know, I always think game one, game two, you get a lot of people who are willing to throw a little bit more money on it. Mm-hmm. But after that, you kind of get to this point where there's still only so much money people have to spend.
You feel that way, but when it gets tight, and maybe if you have a chance to clinch or something, man, people do some crazy shit.
Listen, if we're up 3-1 going into game five, nobody's going to be able to get in that goddamn stadium.
we'll have to come back and delete this pod because you'll have sold your third location of Foundation to buy tickets. So.
I'll have sold my house. I'll have sold the clinic.
For sure. Maddie will be there, man. And he won't be able to afford the $25 beer, but he'll have the $1,300 ticket. So
exactly.
That's how that
and I might
goes.
Have to call in from a payphone at that point.
Exactly. That's Talk and Sports for another week. Like I said, the NBA Finals start up on Thursday. We'll touch base with Maddie a couple times as the series rolls on. I know the city's engaged. I know just on the number of downloads that we've been getting on this show with Maddie when we're talking Raptors shows just how much people are engaged in this team and this sport right now. So we're obviously going to stay on top of it. That'll wrap us up for this week. Like I said, you can give us a follow on Twitter at Talkan Audio. Same on Instagram. He's at Matthew Lang on Twitter, at Matt Does Physio on Instagram. And we'll wind this one down. That's Talkan Sports, and we'll see you.
We're not going to be fucking sucked this year.
Thanks for listening. You can get more TCA at TallCanAudio.com or by searching TallCanAudio on your favorite podcast app.